Mr. Roach.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Juan Roach on behalf of the petitioner, Ms. Garibaldi. This court should remand this case to the Board of Immigration Appeals to allow the court to consider whether Ms. Garibaldi is eligible for 42B cancellation of removal. The first question for the panel is whether the court has jurisdiction to review this case. And the answer that I've spelled out in the briefs is that the court does. This court has routinely held or retained jurisdiction over immigration cases in which the petitioner has never filed a motion to reopen or a motion to reconsider. And the reason that is because, as the court explained in Noriega-Lopez, there is no statutory right, or as a matter of right, non-citizens do not have, or I should say the BIA is only discretionary for them to consider the motion to reopen. It's not a statutory right. And because of that, it's not a remedy that has to be exhausted.
The statute says that our review is limited to the administrative record and that remedies have to be exhausted. So how can we do anything with ineffective assistance when none of the materials on which it's based were presented to the BIA?
Well, as I was explaining, Your Honor, administrative exhaustion is not required in this case. As I said, because the court has routinely held jurisdiction or retained jurisdiction in many cases in which an alien does not file a motion to reopen or a motion to reconsider. So the case law is there that is an exception to the exhaustion requirement. But even if the court is required, or that the petitioner was required to file.
Not just the exhaustion requirement, we're also limited to the administrative record. None of these materials, as I understand it, that you're relying on are in the administrative record. Is that right?
That's right. I filed a motion for judicial notice, so that's certainly outside the administrative record. But I think the bulk of the information that I outlined or spelled out in the briefs clearly is found in the administrative record. There's when Ms. Garibaldi was informed, when she retained Mr. Pope. These are all the things that are clearly in the administrative record. Also, her appellate counsel's lack or failure to file a petition with the Board of Immigration Appeals. And he clearly didn't read the administrative record, because he would have realized that the petition had never been filed with the immigration judge.
Mr. Pope?
I do not recall how his name is.
He had a whole series of lawyers, and it appears, counsel, just a second. It appears from the record that they all had a very difficult time getting in touch with her. This thing has been going on for 10 years, and she just was absent essentially from her counsel and from anything else having to do with this case.
Well, Your Honor, there's no record here or evidence that she failed to present herself at all her immigration appearances. Second, as the record shows, this case was administratively closed for 2, maybe 3 years, so there was no action done. Mr. Pope was retained, I believe, in July of 2011, and in December 12, 2012, he told the court that he would file an application for cancellation of removal. And he had 5 years to do that, and he never did. And then he filed a motion to continue the individual hearing in October of 2017, 8 days before the individual hearing, in which he told the court that Ms. Garibaldi had another collateral matter that she had to attend to. So he was clearly in communication with her. All of this is in the administrative record. So that's why.
Roger, let me interject a question that was on my mind, and it's this. In view of the fact that your client has many children born in the U.S. and that some types of immigration relief, like cancellation of removal, take equities into account, I was wondering whether there was any motion to reopen pending before the BIA, at this time.
No, Your Honor, there wasn't. And I want to explain that, because I know the government raises that issue in their answering brief. And the reason is that the 8 CFR 1003.2 spells out what the requirements are for a motion to reopen. And none of those apply to my client, because for one, the 90 days had already expired for her. Recall that She pro se filed a petition for review with this court, and because she's uninitiated, she wasn't sure of how to proceed with an opening brief. And even this court gave her an additional 35 days, and she still wasn't sure what to do until she contacted my office, and then we filed a motion, an emergency motion for stay of removal. So the 90 days is required in the statute. Two, it says that if the the alien must show that they're statutory eligible. And the whole issue of eligibility was an issue that was discussed at the immigration judge, whether the underlying conviction from 2009 was a crime involving moral turpitude. Third, the record, the statute says, or the code says, that it must be that it could have been found in the record or new material evidence. And her appellate attorney, I believe his name is Mr. Obisi, he failed to even look at the record. So the Board of Immigration Appeals would likely have denied any motion to reopen based on those factors, that it's like, well, this could have been discovered by appellate counsel, it's past 90 days, and the government has contended she's not eligible for cancellation of removal. So the motion to reopen was not something that she, even if she had to do, that she was required to do under these circumstances. In addition to that, we have all, in our briefs, we've alleged this is a due process because the failure of her counsels, both her immigration trial counsel and her immigration appellate counsel, failed to file not only an application, but even a brief, despite telling the court that they were going to do so and even explain what the issues were that they had planned to raise. So that's why here that the motion to reopen here was not a valid remedy here. But even if it was required, as I said before, the case law in this circuit has said that they're not the petitioners are not required to do that because as a matter of right, it's not statutory, it's discretionary. And that's what makes this case different. And I think that that's why the court does have jurisdiction and the court should address the merits of the application. Even if this court were to deny the motion for judicial notice, it doesn't take away from the fact or minimize the record before the court that Mr. Pope, having the case for 5 years, failed to file an application. And her attorney then said, yeah, the IJ was wrong in finding that she was ineligible when the IJ never made such a finding. So clearly, if he had looked at the record, he would have actually said, hey, failure to file a motion is per se ineffective assistance of counsel, and would have then proceeded with the motion to reopen or file that on appeal. I'm not sure. But what we do know that he didn't do any of those things. So she was ineffectively represented at every stage of the proceeding. And so she found herself in this situation, but it was not her doing that she was not in touch with her counsel. I think the administrative record clearly shows that she was in touch with them. I have, Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my remaining time for rebuttal.
That's fine. But I have one more question.
Yes, Your Honor.
But I'll end up giving you extra 2 minutes. What I wanted to know aren't there some circumstances where a motion to reopen can be filed more than 90 days after a decision for exceptional circumstances for other reasons? And the reason asking is that if your client had sought to reopen and they had reopened, you would be able to make a record of everything you want to say. But the problem is now you're making a record verbally of what you want to say on points that weren't exhausted.
So to Your Honor's first question about, I'm assuming that Your Honor means equitable tolling. And yes, so certainly a non-citizen could have filed a motion to reopen beyond the 90 days with equitable tolling. But I think the circumstances in this case, which are different, for example, I believe it was the same case, is that here my client was representing herself pro se at this point. She didn't know what the rules were whatsoever. So I think the court should take that into account that she wasn't being represented by counsel. So she wasn't aware of what the equitable tolling rules were about. But even assuming that when I came onto the case, I suppose I could have filed a motion to reopen and stayed these proceedings pending a decision from the BIA. But as I've already said, the reason that was not done is because based on the 8 CFR 1003.2, none of those factors apply here. She was advised of her relief. She was beyond 90 days. There was questions about even her eligibility, so that was not an issue, and therefore that's why counsel never filed a motion to reopen. But again, it doesn't have to, because this court has routinely retained jurisdiction over these cases, especially when they're asserting a due process right.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Rocha. You've answered my question. For planning purposes, you can make a 2-minute rebuttal.
Thank
after
you.
Ms. Whitaker makes her argument. So we'll turn to the government respondent now.
Thank you very much. May it please the court, my name is Kristen Whitaker, and I'm here on behalf of the Attorney General of the United States. This court should deny in part and dismiss in remaining part the petition for review. First, the court should deny in part the petition for the review to the extent that it seeks review of the board's dismissal of Ms. Garibaldi's administrative appeal. Ms. Garibaldi does not address, let alone contest, any aspect of the board's decision and therefore abandons any challenge to the board's determinations. Notwithstanding that waiver and the government's objection, the record supports the board's conclusions where Ms. Garibaldi did not file any applications and she failed to establish good cause for a 6th continuance. Now, if the court doesn't have any questions about that aspect of the review petition, I'll go ahead and move to the second portion.
What is your response? Now, he says that Mr. Pope just sat on this thing for 5 years and he had made a representation, which I think he did, that he intended to file, and then he didn't file. Now, I understand that he said that, he was going to file, but then he couldn't get a hold of her, and then she had apparently some petition filed against her to possibly remove her children because she had the child abuse conviction, and I don't know what else happened there. It's not that the record is so thin, but I think that essentially he's saying that she was grossly misrepresented here and that somehow should affect our ruling.
Well, I think that you hit the nail on the head previously when you were asking counsel about her communications with the attorney, with her former attorneys. Based on the record that we have before us, we don't know the scope of the representation. We don't know the communications that she had with her attorney. And based on the record, her attorney said that she wasn't in contact with her. Although she may have been in contact in regards to the child custody case relating to the child abuse conviction, we don't know anything else from the record. And so that's why it's important that the matter would be exhausted. Outside of that, based on the record that we have, the board and the immigration judge didn't abuse its discretion in denying a continuance because there was no good cause presented for a continuance or for her failure for filing.
Do you agree that she could file a motion to reopen now beyond the 90 days so she could develop a record on this?
She most certainly can file a motion to reopen. There is equitable tolling. I shouldn't presume what the board will say, but there is the option that you can be entitled to equitable tolling if you show that you were unaware of counsel's ineffectiveness and that you exhibited diligence in trying to ascertain that ineffectiveness. So most certainly she can file a motion to reopen. Respectfully, counsel indicated in the reply brief that the board didn't have jurisdiction to reopen the case. Respectfully, that's legally incorrect. The regulations indicate the board may reopen any case in which it has rendered a decision. There's Stone v. INS. I believe it was Castello Perez, a case the petitioner had presented in which the petitioner had a pending motion to reopen regarding ineffective assistance of counsel and a pending petition for review before the court regarding ineffectiveness, and they were allowed to proceed simultaneously. So, and also Ruby Waters recognizes the board's authority to be able to reopen a case when it comes to motions to reopen for ineffective assistance of counsel. So she most certainly can file a motion to reopen. We have no idea how the board would rule. And though Ms. Garibaldi comes before the court and says that she would be deprived of her rights, it doesn't stop with the board. Let's say, for instance, if the board found that there was that she didn't, exhibit diligence or she didn't satisfy a Lozada procedural requirement or something that she found fault with, she can still seek review before this court. But if the court doesn't mind, I'll go into the second portion of the government's argument, and that is that the court should dismiss the remaining part of the review petition because it lacks subject matter jurisdiction of Ms. Garibaldi's unexhausted claims. Now, Barron v. Ashcroft found that under 8 U.S.C. 1252, that the petitioner's due process claim was unexhausted, and therefore they lack subject matter jurisdiction of it. In that case, it noted that there are procedural due process claims that must be exhausted before the agency. And I know that this the court has case law in which they have concluded that a motion to reopen is not a remedy as of right. And that case law has been in place since as early as 1992. But there have been multiple cases since then, Barron v. Ashcroft, Ortiz v. INS, Vilches v. Holder, Lou v. Waters, in which the court has found that it's lacked jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction, to consider unexhausted claims. And I think the court also raised a good point that we can't review the extra record documents here because it wasn't presented before the agency. So I also wanted to note to the court, Ms. Garibaldi relies on the decision Hernandez-Mendoza in support of her argument that the court lacks jurisdiction over, retains jurisdiction over the ineffectiveness claim. However, the government wants to clarify, although the government indicated that that was good law, in preparing for oral argument, I realized, though it's included in the Federal Register, the third series, it's actually unpublished. It's not precedent and it's not binding on the court. Outside of Hernandez-Mendoza, the only other precedent I could find in which the court did not require exhaustion of ineffective claims are district habeas cases or 1326 proceedings in which the ineffectiveness occurred at least in part after the agency proceedings had completed and they were deprived of judicial review before the federal courts of appeal. So we have like Derringer, the PFR was...
Hernandez-Mendoza was withdrawn from the bound volume?
So Hernandez, if you look at the end of the decision, it actually says it's not precedent. I just recently discovered it. So it's within the Federal Register, but the actual decision itself says that it's not precedent according to the Ninth Circuit rules. I just recently discovered this. And so it's not binding on the court. And if you look at the actual citations to the decisions... courts themselves are a bit confused, like the Third Circuit cited to it as precedent. But then if you look at district court citations to it, they refer to it as memorandum.
Hey, Ms. Whitaker, I have a question for you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Further to some things Mr. Rocha said and that you've said, if Mr. Rocha were to change his mind on behalf of his client and to file a motion to reopen before the BIA, would the Department of Justice oppose the filing of that motion? Or would it be neutral? Or would it agree that he should be able to file?
The Department of Justice believes that he should file a motion to reopen. As to whether the motion itself would be opposed, I can't speak on behalf of the Department of Homeland Security. I don't know what their position would be. There are equities in this case. And as you pointed out, you would look at the equities, like the children involved, criminal convictions. We know there are a couple of criminal convictions at play here. There's just multiple factors, but I can't speak to how the Department of Homeland Security what their position would be.
Assuming that we were to agree with you on the merits of your argument and do what you ask for, your position is that he would still be entitled to file his motion to reopen? Because he took the position that he couldn't, but your position is that he could.
The board has the authority to reopen a case, and so he can definitely file a motion to reopen. I can't guarantee what the board's result would be, but that shouldn't stop the court from following the statute and its case law and either requiring as a matter of jurisdiction that Ms. Garibaldi exhaust her claims or under the doctrine of prudential exhaustion requiring her to exhaust her claims. I know that Ms. Garibaldi referred to some cases like Noriega and Castillo. And in those cases, it's important to note that the board in some fashion erred. They took notice of facts. There was a change in the law or legal memorandum, and the board's position was clear, and so they felt that there was no need to send it back to the board and that the court could already adjudicate the issue. And so we don't have that circumstance here. It's not a foregone conclusion. We don't have a full record. And looking to PUGA, applying the factors, the board is fully competent to evaluate this issue. They are well-versed in the practices of immigration and immigration attorneys, and they should be able to evaluate the claim in the first instance. And I should also note, go ahead.
Well, I'll give you extra time if you want it, but I have a related question. If Mr. Rocha were to file a motion to reopen and the government, Department of Justice did not oppose it, but the board declined to reopen for whatever reason, certain factors you've mentioned or otherwise, is that decision on a motion, the denial of a motion to reopen, is that reviewable by our court?
If the board denies it on the basis of, you know, she failed to show that she was entitled to equitable tolling or she didn't meet certain Lozada procedural requirements, yes, this court has repeatedly reviewed those issues and said, you know, whether they were reasonable. They reviewed it under an abuse of discretion standard. So, yes, Your Honor.
I thank Judge Gould because that was the exact question I was going to ask.
And then as for my last point, I would just say that the government stresses that it doesn't believe it or the court can actually evaluate this claim without contravening Supreme Court precedent. You know, Paul v. Gonzalez, Ventura, Chenery. And so we ask this court to deny in part the petition for review or and dismiss it in part, or if the court finds that it has jurisdiction, to deny it in its entirety and require Ms. Garibaldi to exhaust her claims before the agency. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, Mr. Rocha, you get 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
You don't need to use it if you don't want to.
No, I would. Thank you, Your Honor. So quickly, given my time constraint, the panel asked about Mr. Pope and communication with Ms. Garibaldi. The record is clear that he was retained in July of 2011. On December 12, 2012, he told the court that an application for cancellation had been filed, right? And who knows how he based that, but he told the court that not only once, but several times. It wasn't until 2017, on the eve of her merits hearing, that he realized that none had been filed. In fact, he was on notice by both the government and the immigration court that they had no such application on file, yet he assured them that one had been filed and that he would provide the court with a copy before the individual hearing. That's all in the record. There's nothing extrajudicial about that. Second, with respect to equitable tolling, certainly, like I said in my opening remarks, that's certainly an option, but it's not an option in this case, because if you look at the ACFR 1003.2, it says it shall state new facts, have an application for relief, not granted unless it appears to the board that the evidence sought to be offered is material and could not have been discovered. Not granted if it appears that the alien was given the right to apply for such relief and was fully explained to him about those opportunities. These are the things that never happened. Oh, I'm sorry. The third prong, she was explained. It was beyond the 90 days. And again, there was issues about whether she was even eligible for cancellation. That's in the record. So that was not a viable option there.
But counsel, excuse me. On the one hand, you're arguing that equitable tolling wouldn't be available to her because she somehow knew about these things. And on the other hand, you're saying all these lawyers malpracticed her and she didn't know anything about these deadlines. I mean, which is it? She either knew or she didn't know.
No, she didn't know there was equitable tolling.
Even under your rubric, she would still be in a position to make that argument before the board.
Right. I suppose she could make the argument. What I'm saying is that there's no need to do that. I'm sorry. That the board is likely to deny that because of the requirements in the CFR for a motion to reopen. She doesn't meet them. So the court would deny those. So that's why that's a remedy that wasn't available or could not be available to her. So again, yes, certainly equitable tolling could be, but in this case, I believe that that's, given the CFR, would not be a viable option for her. And then lastly, Your Honor, I know that government counsel says that Hernandez-Mendoza is not authoritative, so it's not binding on the court. While that may be the case, there's still Noriega versus Lopez, there's Alcaraz, so there's a host of other cases that actually do give the court authority to retain jurisdiction and to review the merits of her ineffective assistance of counsel claim. So with that, we submit the case for review.
Thank you, Mr. Rook. This case has been nicely argued on both sides. We appreciate the advocacy. At this point, Garibaldi versus Garland shall be submitted. And counsel will hear from us in due course.
Thank you.